Hello, welcome to the Big Elk Show. We just had a really good discussion about a moose and how big they are, and it was really enlightening. Sorry you weren't here. Joining me to discuss the massive week in tech, which is coronavirus free. We did it on the Mac Show. We've achieved it, and we did it on the first show. We've achieved that as well. So we're going to do it on the big show. There will be no mention of C19 here, apart from just maybe some passing references or something like that. That is it. Joining me, fantastic panel. We've got a full four-seater. Starting us off, the man who's been absent the last couple of weeks, slowly getting his insulation sorted. How the devil are you, Atlee?
Not bad. How are you guys doing? I hope everybody's okay out there.
You're on hold, aren't you, for the development of the new facility?
We're basically actually tomorrow we're going to be starting to put in the drywall behind me. But we did sort of put a hold on it. Actually, we put a whole bunch of drywall in on the other side to open up the windows because the computers in the back are starting to heat the whole building. And now I have all the heaters in the building turned off. And because it's above zero here, the building's getting too hot. So I have to open the windows.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Don't you need aircon in that room, though?
We have an aircon going in April. Oh, we have someone coming in. They're putting in an actual server room refrigeration sets to keep the room at around 10 degrees.
My God.
Yeah.
Need anyone to come out and do the dusting for you or something like that? No.
I know. The problem is as soon as I clean it, within like a few hours, it's all dusty again because there's still dust floating around. So it's one of the reasons why we would need to make sure that the server room is all sealed off. It's all sealed off and dust-free.
Excellent, mate. Good to have you back. Glad you're here. Next to him, the man who can't tell the time in a different country. Oh, what are you like, Jeffrey? You got it right last week.
Yes, I did, but I put the times for the Mac show and the webinar I was doing on my calendar before the time change and didn't think about what that would do to the times after the time change. And it turns out that they completely overlapped.
That's all right. You knew it was going to happen at one point, most definitely.
Yeah, it had to happen at some point.
Bob Beach, Deep Pan saying he's actually running the Canadian version of NORAD.
No. NORAD's equipment's too old.
Oh! Ouch. Now then, Jeffrey, Boulder Weather Report.
It's been sunny throughout the week. But as of early this morning, the temperature dropped below freezing. It started raining and it's snowing now. And nice. We should have 7.5 inches of snow by tomorrow.
Jeez. Okay. So an entire winter in one night.
Yeah. Welcome to spring in Colorado.
Have you ventured out?
Very rarely.
Yeah. I've not done a great deal different from what I normally do, but we've had rain here today, but I wouldn't be surprised if we get a bit of snow, you know, before it's April. We've had snow in June here, proper snowfall in June before, so could happen.
Yeah, it can happen anytime here. And springtime snows are just to be expected.
Good. Excellent to have you here, mate. Lovely.
Glad to be here.
Next to him, Patrice, with soft furnishings akimbo. The flag is up. The place is slowly coming together.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I finally put my flag up and everything, so good to go.
Now, you're not too bored, are you?
I wouldn't say that. I mean, I've been working a lot simply. That takes your mind.
Are you pretty disciplined or not when it comes to working from home?
Oh yeah, totally. Like I think the opposite issue that I usually work too much when I work from home. Like this week I've worked usually 10-hour days at least.
Right. I'm pretty crap unless I've got a deadline. If I've got a deadline, I'm good. But working from home is usually just an excuse to watch a film on an iPad. Don't tell the wife I said that. She thinks I'm working really hard.
I mean, for me, as I said, like that, it's just the problem is more that I can't stop working because I'm at home. Like, I don't have to leave the office or anything to get home. I'm already here, so might as well continue.
Bob Beach is asking, why an American flag and not a German flag, Patrice?
Well, for one, because I'm a big fan of America, always have been, and this, my apartment, is basically the 51st state, always has been, like for years.
Okay. There is a certain stigma with the German flag, the same as there is with the British flag, isn't there? Of because there's always been an association in England with the fascism element of it, and the same with the German flag a little bit.
It's just, I don't think so. It's just not very common. You will very rarely ever see a German flag in Germany anywhere, other than if there is like a soccer thing going on, a football thing going on somewhere.
It's not a pretty flag, and everyone just comes in and goes, are you Belgian?
No, I think that one, wasn't Belgian in France? Same thing?
No, Belgium's closer to yours, isn't it?
You think of Holland and France.
Yeah, France, yeah. France, oh, and it, yeah, yeah. France and Italy, the one that gets swished around as well, because everyone forgets the blue and the green.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, flags are weird.
Talking of France, Mr. Dabbs, how the devil are you? How's you said you've got 19 degrees today, mate.
Yeah, it's gone down a bit, yeah. as you may have seen in the news, in France we have a lockdown, we have a curfew.
Yeah.
Of course, curfew comes from the French expression couvre-feu, which is what we have. So we're not actually allowed out of the house, that's anyone out of their houses, without a form. The thing is, you can download the form and fill it out and sign it yourself. You don't have to actually get anyone else to sign it. So it's a form of honour to say you're going to the shops.
Okay.
And then a policeman, or if you're outside a city centre, a gendarme can stop you and ask to see your form of honour.
Where's your form?
And you show this form that you filled out and signed yourself. And they go, right, okay, off you go. Everyone is supposed to stay at home, quite literally. All the shops are shut apart from the absolute essentials, such as... Mm-hmm. You know, wine shops, beer shops, cigarette shops, and so on. But everything else is shut. So if my chair breaks or my table falls apart, I'll have to fix it myself, because mm-hmm. there's nowhere I can buy furniture. I can't buy clothes. All the hairdressers are shut. You know what I mean? Everything is permanently, not permanently, but you know what I mean? It's properly closed.
Yeah.
Apart from food shops.
Yeah, we have the same. So
that's
the same here.
That's what it's going to be like in Britain in a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have the same in Austria since last week, basically.
I went past the local pub last night, and there was plenty of people in there on the way back from the office. There's loads in.
Well, yeah, I mean, if they were open here, they'd still be full. But there you go. It's a strange thing that you have to walk around with a form that you filled out yourself and
I guess it is an indication that you've been stopped to think about what you're doing rather than just ploughing and doing it without any thought process behind it.
Yeah, I mean, people were texting the Minister of Sport saying, does that mean I can't go out for a run? And he was actually replying saying, yes, you can go out for a run, but keep it to 20 minutes. You know, someone said, well, I want to do a 10K run. And actually, the Minister of Sport replied, well, you know, if you want to do a 10K run in 20 minutes, you can always take the train. But, you know, it's just... give him, you know, a couple of marks for sense of humour. But it's quite strange here. And, of course, the weather's been a bit so-so around here. As soon as they announced this curfew, we all have to stay at home. Of course, then the sun came out.
Of course. So
it's absolutely impossible to stay in.
Have you got a balcony at your place?
Sorry?
Have you got a balcony or a nice garden or...?
Well, I've got a little balcony. I've got a back garden. But, it's, you know, I want to go out for a walk in the sun. And so does everyone else. So they've actually come up with new rules that are banning people from going to the beach, because people are going to the beach and then sunbathing. But, of course, they don't want people to sunbathe too close to each other. So they're banned from going on the beach altogether. So I was thinking maybe go for a run early in the morning. But then therein lies another problem, which is when they described what it is to self-isolate, they are in effect describing what a freelance journalist does anyway, which is have no friends, stay at home and use the phone a lot. So as soon as they told me I had to do that, of course, I've got problems getting up in the morning. I get listless. I want to go out. So I keep finding excuses. I think we need to buy some bread. you know, so we go out and buy some more bread. And honestly, I cannot fit any more bread into the freezer.
Oh, you've got all the frigging bread. Right, thanks, Matt. Have you got all the bloody eggs and all?
Oh, we see eggs. No, in fact, there's nothing running short in France. I think there was someone tried to do a run on toilet paper, but that that didn't work.
It's
all the B-days.
I haven't
anyway, the other thing they have in France is only 100, a maximum of 100 people are allowed to group, to be in a group anyway, including supermarkets. So they now have bouncers at supermarkets to count people in and out to make sure there's no more than 100 at a time.
And there's 1,000 so people in the queue.
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. So it's virtually impossible to panic buy without it being really, really obvious and being lynched by all the other people in the queue trying to get in. So no one does. So nothing's running short that I'm aware of.
I am third day without eggs. We cannot get eggs anywhere for 3 days. I've been trying to get some for my parents as well. And I am just satisfied that the toss pots that have gone out and bought them are going to work out what egg bound means in a couple of days.
It's annoying because eggs last forever, don't they?
No, yeah, they'll be off in a month. So that they'll either have the shits or they'll be gummed up so bad that they'll have stomachache. So serves them right, bastards.
There was a meme going around like what the thing is that is running short in different countries, and I think in France it was condoms, if I remember correctly.
I did a photo shoot for a lady who does a balloon company yesterday.
No, sorry, could I just pop in there? No.
No, okay.
No.
Well, there's a pharmacy on every corner. I mean, there are more pharmacies in France than there are corner shops in Britain. I mean, it's just, no, there's no, they're not running short of in English cap.
Now, this lady Naomi who did the balloons yesterday, she's put a tweet out today that she's got emergency balloons, and she's got a big balloon with pop in an emergency and it's got a loo roll inside it.
That's funny. So we were talking about population density and social distancing earlier, and the UK has 274 people per square kilometre and Nova Scotia has 17.
Per square kilometre, right. Okay.
Yeah. So just by this province nature, and the area I'm in has 4.
That's an average, so there's a lot more in London and stuff like that. Yeah,
yeah, no, exactly. Yeah.
Bob Beach is gloating. He went to a farm shop and got them, loads of them. Bugger. None left at the supermarket. And he said he's also got no friends. That's why, mate, because you're a bugger. Yeah.
I could send you some eggs, like from Austria.
Austrian eggs.
We got plenty.
Yeah, there's got to be a food thing about that, surely. And I'll have to pay the import tax on them now because we're not in the EU. Yeah, no. It's getting messy. The Week in Tech, all the stuff that's gone on. Who's got the first story? Who wants the kudos? Alice, do we need to limit you to one story this week?
I'll wait.
That got a bit out of hand. Well, no, the alcohol got a bit out of hand, not your stories, to be fair. Bill Gates is gone. He stepped down from the board, and Jeffrey's going to tell us all about it.
So first off, how did I manage to beat everyone else with the story and the
chapter? Because Campion's not here.
Oh, yep, that explains it. All right. So Bill Gates, he hasn't been nearly as involved in Microsoft's business for quite a while, but now he is almost completely out. I mean, he still has some ties with Microsoft, but now he's not even on the board. And so he's decided it's time to focus his energy pretty much exclusively on his philanthropic efforts. So I find it interesting in that here's the company that he founded, and he's pretty much out now. And I think ultimately he will be remembered more for his philanthropic work than for Microsoft. I might be wrong, but I think his philanthropic efforts are going to ultimately outshine his reputation.
Yeah, is that going to be Microsoft? Like a generational thing, though? So, like, oh, if you say Bill Gates to me, I'll always go, wow. Same as Paul, what's his name, who's died. Yeah, I know that those guys were Microsoft. They were the beginning of it all. and I'll never erase that. Whereas my son won't know Bill Gates in the same light, and my daughter probably will never know Bill Gates in any kind of software or hardware capacity. She'll always see him as, if she even knows about him in that time, because his philanthropic stuff is good, but he is kind of quiet with that, isn't he? It doesn't take a lot of limelight with it because of the fact it's philanthropic and it's just injecting money here and there to do stuff. He doesn't really kind of push himself forwards in the media.
No, he doesn't, which I think is an indicator that for him, the philanthropy is something that he genuinely wants to do. And he genuinely wants to help people. And this is not about stroking his ego, creating a bigger than life character. He really wants to help people.
I think Melinda gets, she does most of the speeches, doesn't she?
Yeah, he was the one that started it all. Yeah.
He has never, I mean, even back at Microsoft, he's never been that, like, that big of a character and that big of a, like, a showman. Like, I mean, yeah, he would do the things he had to do and do the interviews or whatever, but he was never someone that would step into the light if he had, like, if he didn't have to.
He was never the carnival barker that Steve Jobs or Steve Ballmer was. He was never up there bouncing around and trying to, you know,
jumping up and down, shouting,
get everybody to say, look at me and look at me and look at what I'm doing and how wonderful am I. And he was always more interested in the technology. And actually, when it comes to his work at Microsoft, he's probably actually going to be about as involved at Microsoft as he has been for the last few years. The last little while, he's been working on a technical advisory role and helping Satya Nadella to sort of steer the company in the right direction to try and recover all the things that have happened over the last 10 years with it. What he did was he pulled away from the board to be pulled into the profit and loss garbage. Mm. And that part of it, he's more interested in the technological. So that's the part he's going to continue working with Microsoft on. And when it comes to the philanthropy, he also has pulled away from Berkshire, which was the company that he was on the board with Warren Buffett. So he's pulled away from that as well. And actually, one of the either the chairman or someone who is very high on the board at Facebook actually left Facebook's board to take Gates's seat in the Berkshire Holdings board. So, it's a really interesting story, but I think that, Bill Gates has always been more about the result and not the glory.
Yeah, but he's a geek, isn't he, at heart? That's the thing. He's never happy unless he's punching holes in data cards and shoving them into a reader.
For
example, there's a story about when he was at Harvard, he solved a math equation that had been sitting there unsolved for over 30 years. And when they finally marked the paper that he had and everything and said, oh, you've solved it. And, you know, we're going to give you high marks for this. He was kind of like, yeah, I don't care. I did it because it was a problem that needed to be solved. Mm. And that's sort of him in a nutshell. He's always about, what's the problem? How do I solve it? Okay, now what's the next problem? Mm. And so he's looking at global warming. He's looking at climate change. He's looking at you know, ways to help, you know, feed the parts of the planet that should be able to be fed but aren't. He's looking at ways to help eradicate diseases that shouldn't be around anymore and to offer, you know, a decent standard of living to every person on the planet. And that seems to be sort of his drive right now.
Good.
Yeah, I wish he'd put that much effort into Windows Vista.
Wasn't he out at that point? I think he was.
I didn't mind Vista. It wasn't too bad. It wasn't as bad as people want to make it.
You know, the thing is, Vista would have been a lot better if the hardware had been a little stronger at the time. Because if you put something like Vista on a machine nowadays, it flies. The hardware was very clunky. It was very thick.
When someone complains, it phones up and you say, well, it's your fault.
It's what?
Well, it's like, you know, the roof has blown off my house. Where something wrong with your house, mate?
No, I'm not saying.
Your house should have been stronger to keep the roof on.
It was too thick and clunky. It was not built for the hardware that was being built at the time. It was not
badly designed software. That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
What gets me about Bill Gates is, I don't know if you can show that website again with a photograph of him, but. Sure. I'm sure when I got my first job, when I came down to London, He was younger than me. And now he looks like
the
Discovery Channel, you know, one of those tortoises sticking his head out the shell. So
is that
somehow
you
overtaken me by, I was just looking at Michael Dell. Michael Dell also used to be younger than me. He's now only 1 year younger than me. I reckon in a couple of years, he's going to be about 5 years older.
So I mean, are you actually young? Are you actually older than Gates?
No, but I assumed I was because
Right. Every
time we ran a photograph in 1987 in a computer magazine.
Yeah, right.
You know, you saw this 12-year-old child, you know, running a company. And you thought, wow, he's a kid. And that was the big thing, him and Michael Dell.
Except it was a 10-year-old photo.
Well, evidently.
Welcome, Crikey Trousers. He's put in the Slack room. Is there no one in the chat? And then he's realised he's in the wrong room. Bravo. Welcome. Good to see you, mate. He's 64, says Bob Beach.
Yeah.
Yes, he is. Yeah. Not quite retirement. Hang on, 64. It's not 66, is he?
Bob says he's 64. So Bob's an economist, so he must be right.
Look, what year was he born? Yeah, 64.
I can't do that math quite quickly.
Yeah, 60. It's 55 he was born in.
Okay, so he's coming up to 65 then. Can't be far off.
Yeah.
October 28th.
We'll have to remember to send him a birthday card. Just before Halloween. He can go as a tortoise. He can go as the tortoise out of Kung Fu Panda. I mean, how much is he actually worth now? That's because I know it's not what is in his pocket, but he's the last time I looked, it was something stupid. It was in the 30 billions.
111 billion.
It's worth 111 billion. My God.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I mean, and that's with him having given away half of it every year for the last 10 years.
I mean, you just have to remember, I mean, he is a major shareholder in not just Microsoft, but also a couple of other companies, I think. So, yeah. That alone is worth a lot.
Who was Paul? What's his name? What's his surname? I can't bloody remember.
Paul Allen.
I was listening to a podcast the other week, and there was Penn Jillette on from Penn and Teller, and it's a story that Paul Allen wanted to celebrate his birthday on his cruise ship, his yacht, this massive thing that he got, 400-foot jobby, and he booked a whole pile of Vegas stars and international superstars to go on this thing, booked them for 2 weeks, and Penn Jillette was just like, so you can imagine, to shut down Penn and Teller in Las Vegas for 2 weeks is going to cost you a pretty, he said, I don't know what it was because, you know, that's dealt with by my agent, but, you know, it's going to be an awful lot of money. So they booked it, and then he died before his birthday. So they said, so what are we going to do? We'll happily cancel. We won't charge you. It's fine. Don't worry about it. And apparently Alan's management team were just like, no, this is the, all would have wanted the party to go on. We're going to have the party. Everyone's going to go on it. It's going to be a massive party on the cruise ship. And they had a massive party for Paul Allen after his death. And
wow.
And it must have cost Christ knows how much. But good on him. So to think that two of them have got wealth at 100 billion-ish maybe.
At the time of his death, he was worth 20.3 billion. Paul Allen.
So he'd frittered it away then, is what you're saying.
Well, he'd bought the Seattle Seahawks, I think, and a few other sports teams.
Yeah.
And that, Matt, I think he put in that dome and a bunch of other things. He did a bunch of things for the area, and he was into sports and things. So, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Good lad.
They could run that again.
Awesome movie theater in Seattle.
Nothing would get me to put a foot on a cruise ship. I have to tell you that.
Right now
not now.
No, ever or not now.
Ever. And I was proof right.
Same.
Everyone keeps telling me that cruises are good fun. They're great for the old folk, and they're not just for the old folk, rather. So I'd love to. Well, I don't know if I'd love to, but never mind. Jeffrey, you said something sensible. Go on. He did a lot for.
He did a lot for Seattle. He had that awesome movie theater in Seattle too, that had all the movie memorabilia in it. And I've been there and I've seen movies, and it's right. just a cool place. Mm-hmm. So yeah, people in Seattle have very fond memories of Paul Allen.
Oh, good.
And rightly so.
Yeah, Bob Beach hates cruises as well, and I hate the idea of a cruise.
Yeah. You know, I've been on two cruises, and they were both very different parts of the world, and both are really nice. And it was a really nice way to relax and get to experience different parts of the world. I wouldn't do one now.
No. Yeah, I don't know if you are you saying they're good or they're bad.
I think cruises can be good, and
I think
we want to know what your thoughts are. Did you enjoy it? Didn't you enjoy them?
I totally enjoyed both cruises.
Right. Okay.
And if it weren't for the fact that that we have to deal with all the pandemic stuff we're dealing with now, if I had an opportunity to go do another cruise, I would go do it, but I don't think that's a wise choice right now.
No, no, not right now. It's the worst environment you can put it into for sharing air. But Crikey Trousers, but the wife wants to do a Disney cruise. I didn't know there was a Disney cruise.
Disney? That's not one of the cruises I did, but I know people that have done many Disney cruises. And if you're going to do only one cruise in your life, it should probably be a Disney cruise.
Hmm.
I hear there's a thing about like pop stars, or minor pop stars, rock stars having a cruise. So people book for like, I don't know, 3-4 days, and there are so many performances. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine what that's like.
Well, I mean, the cruise ships are actually like floating theatres, aren't they? They're not. You've got a theatre that's the size of the Hippodrome in a boat.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just they say, you know, never meet your heroes. Well, if you met your hero and you're stuck on a cruise with him for 5 days, you'd be throwing him overboard by the end.
Yeah, I don't know that you bump into him at the buffy, though, do you?
No, you wouldn't.
Well, I don't know. No. Maybe you do. I mean,
maybe you do. Yeah, absolutely. Crikey Trousers won't be taking his wife on the Disney cruise because he says he'd rather eat his own feet.
And those are big feet.
Sorry, Jeff. I cut across you there.
Oh, on the dining on cruises, the VIPs like that, you're not going to see them in the buffet. They're going to be eating in the on-ship restaurants, and they're going to be eating in the exclusive private dining parts of those restaurants. So,
yeah,
the likelihood that you run into the big talent like that is very low. You'll just get to see them perform and keep your fantasy about who they are.
Bob's saying he wants to go to a place and spend several days there to properly explore it, not one day or less. I think that's probably a bit unfair, Bob, because from what I've understood about cruises, they are very, especially if you go on like some of the big ones where there's 5,000 people on the ship and stuff, they're really big and really there's loads to do.
Yeah, there was one in Japan. It's been there for weeks.
Yeah, all right, mate. We're not doing that. We're not doing that. We're not taking the piss.
I'm sorry. No.
Good story, mate.
Yeah, floating cities. There's tons of stuff.
Yeah. Who's got the next story?
I have one.
Did you put it in or?
Yes, I did.
Like that's your story about GitHub.
So, since we were talking about Microsoft, I'm not sure whether you guys know GitHub, which is a big like open source Git platform. That platform is owned by Microsoft. And most people don't know that. They bought that, I think, last year. And that platform just bought another big piece of like software infrastructure that, we basically all rely on. Like almost every website out there, the website part, the JavaScript part is based on a tool called NPM, or like a company even behind it called NPM. Which is like a big repository of code, like of code snippets, of tooling. There have been in the past some like really horrible things where someone pulled like a, I think it was like a package with a couple of lines of code and basically the half of the internet broke, stuff like that. But as I said, like that vendor and that tool and that infrastructure has been acquired by, well, Microsoft ultimately. So even though I know this crowd is probably not the right crowd for it, since they're all not developers, it's still something I wanted to discuss, because I think it is important to keep an eye on like the accumulation of key infrastructure in very few hands. So in this case, Microsoft and GitHub.
I would kind of agree with you in most cases, but Microsoft has already said that they're leaving GitHub to pretty much operate autonomously. They were basically grabbing GitHub the same reason they grabbed LinkedIn, mm-hmm. is so that another player wouldn't drag them into a bigger monopoly somewhere else. Yeah. It's just like LinkedIn. LinkedIn basically has not even really been integrated with any of other Microsoft products, even though they were originally planning to integrate it with Office and a whole bunch of other things. LinkedIn has basically stayed operating pretty much on its own as well. So
there does sound a bit of a do no harm with that, though, because it's like it's not about what you do with it. It's about the fact that you've got what the potential is to do with it. That's the issue with monopolies and mergers is about.
No, I completely agree. But also Microsoft has been under a microscope for the last 20 years after the whole non-compete and the, non-confidence that they went through in the 90s and the early 2000s. So, I mean, they're hyper cautious and hyper, aware of, the optics and, the fact that they have no real power to do anything. Whereas, a lot of other tech companies now with lobbyists and everything else are getting away with murder. Microsoft's still walking around on eggshells most of the time.
Mm. Yeah, that is definitely true. I mean, they are probably worse companies that could have acquired NPM.
Yes. Oh, definitely. No, I agree. I agree. And I have seen that in the last probably 5 or 6 years since Satya's taken over, where they have gone on to acquire these companies so nobody else could grab them and then just leave them to work on their own and just have nothing to do with them. They're basically, we're just here to make sure you're safe for all intents and purposes. And if you look at Satya's mandate has been to really open up Microsoft, really open up to the open source community, to really adopt community and adopt openness and transparency. He's done away with the old Microsoft adage of, if it's not made here, then it doesn't belong here. They bring in things from all over the place. They interop with everything. I mean, if you look at it, the Linux kernel is now part of Windows.
Mm-hmm.
Like Windows now ships with a Linux kernel built into it. So you can actually run Bash terminal right from Windows.
Yeah.
And it's actually running on the Linux kernel, not on the Windows kernel, or spoofing it. It's actually running on a Linux kernel. Mm-hmm. They're doing a lot more to sort of open themselves up and make themselves. They're actually, it's almost like they are going further with what Bill Gates originally started, was trying to make it more open so that it would be more compatible with more things to be able to do more, which is what allowed Microsoft to originally beat Apple in the first place. Because Apple went very closed architecture and closed system and left themselves very restricted, and it really hurt them in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And that's what really almost toppled them in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And now Microsoft's seeing Apple sort of open up and do a little bit more. Even though Apple is still incredibly closed, they're a lot more open than they were 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Microsoft's gone even more open.
Yeah, that's actually not entirely true. Apple has had a very long-running relationship with open source. It's not very public, but a lot of Linux tools that have been around for a long time actually are from Apple or provided by Apple still to this
day. Oh, no, I completely agree. Yeah, but that's only been in the last, since iOS.
No. For example,
iOS timeframe, I mean.
The Linux printing servers, for example, has been around for forever, is still a Apple open source product.
Interesting. I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. As I said, it's not very public, and I would say Microsoft is probably doing more these days. Apple has kind of, they've done some things like on GitHub and open source now, recently in the iOS timeframe, but there's a long-standing tradition in Apple. Microsoft hasn't been that way, and I think it's very good that they're going more in that direction. I think that's simply also where the industry is going. Like nowadays, if you want to attract talent, if you want to like help also with products out there, like everybody's doing it. So, I mean, Google is heavily involved in a lot of open source projects. Netflix is doing it. Apple is, to some extent, in some areas doing it. And I think it's good for Microsoft to do that too. It just helps them as well. And I think they're very smart about it, because the whole Linux kernel in Windows, it's not just so that they can say, oh, we have Linux. No, it's actually
for
a very, very good reason, because they want to make the platform developer
stronger. Yeah.
Stronger, more developer friendly, because
the
industry has moved to a mostly Linux-based like operating platform.
But surely one of the things that you've got as well is the criticality of NPM. So if you're saying that, okay, there's a monopolies and mergers issue potentially, okay, no, there isn't, that's fine. But within the JavaScript framework, NPM's really quite...
It's the thing. Like, there is basically nothing else. Like,
so I mean, there isn't, you could probably... You are looking into potential monopoly issues there on the basis of the criticality of NPM in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. It's
But not any more so than Oracle owning Java, right?
Yeah, which in itself is a big issue.
No, I agree, but I'm just saying, like, it's comparable to that, and Microsoft, like I said, Microsoft is more hyper aware of, you know, how that could affect them business wise, and I mean, if anybody's been fighting these fights with governments and different agencies over the years, it's Microsoft's been fighting them the most, and been dealing with them the most, so they are the most hyper aware of what, you know, where they have to walk and how they have to do this.
I mean, there's a thing here that Friedman's promised users that they won't notice a difference. For millions of developers that use the public NPM registry every day, NPM will always be available and will always be free. But it's not about that. It's not about whether they start charging. It's about what they do with the framework in terms of structuring their own benefits going forwards.
Yeah, I completely agree. There's always a risk with acquisitions like that, even though they say today that they're not doing anything and that they might not do anything, that 5 years, 10 years down the line, that could change.
Which goes back to my comment.
Well, let's just hope that 10 years from now, JavaScript is not the same goddamn JavaScript we're using now.
No, but
please.
But again, that'll be integrated in the evolution of it, won't it? So it does go back to my original frame of the question that said, this smacks of do no harm. Yeah, we'll take it because we'll trust you to take it. But actually, there is a danger that Sachin moves on, or this guy Friedman moves on. Who knows what they're going to do to extort that position and use it?
Yeah, fair enough. But I mean, what are you going to do then? Give it to Google? Give it to Apple? Give it to Facebook?
Oh no, they're all bad
choices.
Those
are the ones that would have bought it.
They're all bad choices.
Totally. No, exactly.
And I mean, the reality is that NPM needed the backing, needed the money.
They really did, or they were collapsing.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that would have been probably a worse situation, because it's not irreplaceable, but it is a very integral part of the web stack now. I mean, something that you as a user don't see, but like we as developers use every day, like all the time.
This one will roll on, I fancy.
Hmm.
Without coming to a conclusion necessarily in our lifetimes.
True.
Comment in the chat room, Microsoft didn't really get into Linux until they got into cloud services and realized that the cloud, the internet backed, was mainly Linux. That's probably fair.
Yeah, it's definitely something to that.
Yeah, but it's one of them, it's them realizing it and then moving to where that was, instead of going, no, now we're going to do this and it's only going to be Windows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got a different attitude. They really have. I mean, working with them as much as I have over the last several years, I have seen a distinct change in the way that things are done, and the way that they are both working with partners and working, you know, internally to make things work better.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Bob has put, my blog is stored on GitHub. I didn't know Bob had a blog. You should have put your blog in the chat room, mate. Let's all go and have a look at it. And it automatically updates to Netlify. Well, I never. Tell us your, Bob, tell us your blog address. Let's go and have a, smooch around it. Who's next?
I got a story in there.
Exactly.
Do you want me to read that out, Bob, or not? Quiet.
Delays.
It's all economics. There you go. So if you'd like to read an economic... that makes the .com makes sense now. So if you'd like to read an economics blog, then go to bobecon.com, bobecon.com, and tell us what you think. Leave him some feedback if you're into your
economics. And that's not bobacon.com, it's bobecon.com.
Bobecon. Bobecon.
Bobecon.
Bobecon. That well-known Star Wars character, Bobecon Fett.
Help me, Bobacon, you're my only tax hope.
Sorry, Bob, we shouldn't have made fun of that. Do apologise. It's the others, not me. I'm going to go and have a look at that, though, because I do like economics, and I've thrown a few things at Bob, and he said I was talking bollocks once or twice, and he said I'm okay on other stuff, so I'm going to have a read of that. I do enjoy it. Right, next story is Atlee.
So we're seeing Netflix is actually turning down their bandwidth usage.
Bob's just turning down the resolution. Sorry, man.
You're going to be able to download, especially in Europe, to help keep the infrastructure safe during this period of very, very high chill.
Bob's put, I really like that pronunciation of Bobacon. I think we might have a title. Sorry, Alec. Now Netflix, you were asking Netflix to do this earlier in the day. Have they actually said they'll do it now then?
Yes. No, they, as far as I know, they said that they were. Mm-hmm. I know that they were, they were definitely asked. But as far as I know, they are they are planning on doing this.
Yeah. So are they just removing the 4K content? Are we going back to 540p?
Yeah, I don't think you'll be seeing a lot of Netflix at 4K right now.
We're going to get Netflix building like some friggin' AOL now.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is they can even just not even change their resolution, but just downgrade the quality a little bit. Stuff like that, simply use less bandwidth. I think it's still true. Netflix is the biggest user of bandwidth worldwide. Mm-hmm. Like the biggest percentage of bandwidth.
They're the only ones streaming 4K content at the volume or at any big volume.
Yeah.
I mean, Amazon is streaming some, but nowhere near the amount that Netflix is. Netflix has set up and implemented 4K streaming at a multiple of what the closest competitor has.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would imagine what's going to happen is they're probably just going to turn off the 4K.
Mm-hmm.
So the largest you'll be able to get it is an HD.
Yeah. And most people will not even know and notice.
And most people won't even notice.
No, they won't.
Exactly. They could literally just turn off 4K and most people wouldn't notice.
Yeah, yeah. But it makes sense. I mean, since more people are working from home and we need more interest, like we need more bandwidth for those critical things, for like working, it just makes sense to do this.
Yeah, no, of course.
Plus, probably more people are watching. I mean, all the kids that are at home right now, they're probably all watching Netflix.
Bob says he signed up to the 4K streaming at $11.99. So will it affect him? And if it does, that's a bit annoying.
Well, I just but I would imagine that they're either going to adjust pricing or they're asking you to sort of work with them with this.
Or they're just going to pocket it all.
Or that, yeah.
It's an interesting story because in France, we've basically got the opposite. Since all the schools have been shut for weeks already and all the shops are shut, everyone has been told to stay at home, not go to work unless they're a doctor. It means obviously there's a bigger demand at home, as this story states. But what's happened is that one by one, the media providers have jumped up and said, oh, we'll give you, a free week of this or a free week of that, you know, various channels. And they're now in some sort of crazy bidding war to give away more and more free stuff. So we're all sitting at home.
Well, I know
Netflix is kind of saying, oh, right, you can have all this for free. And then Amazon come along and say, hey, everyone can have Prime free for 2 weeks. Now we've got, you know, Canal Plus saying, you can have us free for a month. And so it goes on. So actually, I mean, the bandwidth is another issue in France, because I think practically all but a handful of people are still on dial-up here. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how 4X would.
Well, we used to have James Rickards in Chenemets trying to dial in for the dial in for the Mac show from his loft space, and he was the only person on the stream, and it was horrific.
Yeah.
Well, in Canada, I know that our major carriers here have said that
to make us use their services more.
Jeff has dropped in an update. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, it's the same article, but it was just updated a few minutes ago, it looks like.
Right.
And so it says that Netflix is in fact doing this, and what they're going to do is reduce the bit rate on all the streams for 30 days.
Right.
Yeah. So So your 4K won't really be 4K anymore.
It'll
still be the highest
K.
quality.
Well, it was
of
only
the available streams.
It was only 2.5K anyway.
Yeah. So it'll probably only be 1.7 now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really hope that others are doing that too. I mean, I know Netflix is the biggest one, but I'm pretty sure YouTube is a close second. And if they could do that, I think it would help everyone.
YouTube is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, YouTube has a lot of different content. I mean, they have like streams that are only 480p because they were recorded 15 years ago and are still popular. But they also have a lot of 4K content nowadays.
So there's a conversation going on between Deepan here. Also, Netflix have content servers located with ISP cabinets, so most of the Netflix content is only streamed over the final hop, which Patrice agrees with.
Yes, and technically yes, but it's still bandwidth. Like, even if it's only the last hop, I mean, one, the data has to go to the CDN locations. Which are not in your in your street or whatever. They're usually in data centers, maybe in your city, maybe in your next biggest city. Like, it depends. Yeah. So it's still bandwidth that's taken away, because especially on the last couple of miles or couple of hundred miles, where it's most important.
Even if you're looking at just reducing the bandwidth that's going through data on cell towers in a major city for core areas. That's going to have a big impact.
Mm-hmm. That's assuming mobile streaming, of course, rather than...
I mean, how many kids do you know are watching TV on actual TVs anymore?
Yeah, but they're watching it through wireless, aren't they, at home? Because they haven't got the volume of data on their cell phone.
Yeah, fair enough.
But, it's just for the purposes of hoping to be able to gloat, when you say Europe... Because it's the EU that's requested it, because we're not in the EU. Does that mean we're knackered and all? Or are we still on full?
Oh, I'm pretty sure they're going to do it worldwide. It just makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Damn.
Yeah.
I don't think there's really any logistical advantage for them trying to do it for one region versus others.
Streaming.
Right, you guys need to talk one at a time. Go on, Alistair.
So who?
You and Atlee constantly talking over each other, so you obviously have something going on with Skype where you can't hear each other.
Then I'll wait.
No, it's your turn. You go now. Go on.
I was just saying, I don't know how Netflix and Prime do their streaming, but I do know how YouTube does its streaming. It interrogates the browser being accessed. So... It checks the speed at which the browser can access the video and adjusts the stream accordingly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's not necessarily something that YouTube would go, we're going to throttle this.
But it's demand-based. So if you've got a big pipe, it lets you have the 4K.
Yeah, but it changes constantly while you're watching.
Right.
That is to some extent correct, but they can still change how... It's ultimately the decision of the server what they're sending, and they can still change that and simply say, even though your browser could do whatever, 10 megabits, we're going to send
you to the top level.
Got
you. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I start videos all the time, and it suddenly comes up as 720. So I started a video tonight that I'd made and I'd uploaded on my profile, And it started playing it at 720. I'm like, bugger off. I want to watch it at 1080. And I put it on at 1080.
I'll tell you something they could do. Maybe Twitter and some of the other social media could stop the auto-playing of videos altogether.
Oh, yes, please.
Oh, that'd be great. Spam. Let's just get rid of spam, for Christ's sake.
Yep.
The amount of, watch out, fellas. There's a thing coming round, and it's called Instagram Gold. And if you click it, it takes over your phone. Oh, shut up. The chain letter, shut up. Don't click it. Don't send it. Don't put it on, because it's just a chain letter.
Yep.
Mr. Dabbs, tell us about your story.
Okay. It's a story on the Register. So was, you know that film about, I watched it on Netflix not so long ago, any film. Regarding stealing secrets and passing them on, whether they're documentaries or real films. And they often involve, sneaking things away on the various devices. But we've got this kind of true story. What was that film about Ed Snowden? What was it? Was it just called Snowden or something?
Snowden, yeah.
And this crucial bit in the film is he's copying everything onto an SD card. Mm-hmm. And he drops it on the floor and one of his colleagues spots it and kind of stands on it when the boss walks by. And you're going, well, yeah, could you have got something smaller than SD card? You know, was it just a bit of fun made up by Ed Snowden to cover up what he really did? I don't know. But this is exactly what this fella did in this story. He just stuck stuff on SD cards because they're kind of postage stamp size and passed the bond. And I thought, oh, well, maybe that's what they are doing. It's just SD card. It seems a little old-fashioned now, but it's the modern-day floppy disk.
Well, I can say SD cards are absolutely superb. I use them every day for work, but especially micro SDs. You could secrete them anywhere.
Yeah, I mean,
and their transfer rates are insanely fast now.
Yeah,
yes. So quick to load, quick to unload, and pass on.
I'm upgrading mine all the time.
Yeah, it would honestly depend a little bit on the level of security. I mean, I'm pretty sure that the Ed Snowden thing wasn't as depicted. I mean, I think they even said somewhere it was only like a representation of something similar to what he did, or like something that like he figured out. But like, I mean, in high security areas, you couldn't plug in an SD card if you wanted to. Like, it doesn't work. The card, even if there is a card reader, it simply doesn't work. Because like they don't want exactly this to happen.
Well, don't forget, with Snowden, you're going back probably 8 years.
No, that has been around for forever. Like USB ports being locked, that was around 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, but the companies, I mean, so for one of the things that I've got as a major issue is I've got a drop zone system that Anders wrote for me, and I send people the link, and they can't open the link because their systems won't whitelist the website. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, okay, well, how do you want me to send it to you then? WeTransfer? No, we can't. We can't receive WeTransfer. Okay, so I send it on a disk. Then no, we can't use thumb drives. Do you want an SD card? And the problem you've got is that a lot of them have got cameras that they carry around in companies now, particularly construction firms. The safety people will always take pictures. They'll always go around and do site inspections with them. If they have incidents, they use those, and then the SD cards have to go in and they have to store them. And by nature of the fact that they've got this they have to get stuff from cameras into the system, that route for SD cards is still open in a lot of places, awful lot of
but
places.
I can tell you something. For example, hospitals, you cannot plug in like any workstation, you can't just plug in a SD card or USB key or whatever.
No.
There is a way to import data into those systems using SD cards, but it's only available at very specific points. Checkpoints. A lot of hospitals do it that way. There is an import station where you can do that.
Yeah.
And that's the only system where you can do that, and it's especially secured. And as I said, like I've never been to one, but like classified government facilities, I am pretty sure stuff like that is locked down.
Yeah, Patrice is absolutely right about this. That's why I'm so intrigued to know what this unspecified US company was. That hadn't done that.
Yeah, it's the same thing as always. Someone messes up.
Yeah. No, but this guy got sent down for several years, so it couldn't have been an insignificant company. or insignificant data.
Have you guys watched Damian Lewis's spy thing? It was
no.
History Channel played it, and it was I can't remember what the name of the series was, but Damian Lewis, as in Band of Brothers Damian Lewis, not the guy that writes the novels. He did a series on the famous spy stories of the Cold War, and some of the stuff for just getting things out, and it was you just kind of think like, how on earth has no one noticed that? It's like taking sheaves of documents into a photocopying room, photocopy them, rolling them up in a plastic bag, and then stuffing them where a vacant brick is in a bridge in a park, and it's not even subtle. And
yeah, I mean, my favourite was
hiding in plain sight.
Chelsea Manning.
Yeah,
and all she did was stick all the data on a CD, and then with a pen write on the CD, Lady Gaga. That's all she had to do. It was brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that is how you do it. Like it's kind of like playing the social game, playing with people's expectations.
It is. It's good. Skimming through the article, it appears that the guy who actually stole the secret, Ed, has not been caught. Says Bob Peach. The hotel's contact, also known as Ed. Peng would also hide tens of thousands of dollars in hotel rooms for Ed to collect as payments.
Yeah, stuck with some sticky tape under a desk. Or
Peng spent years trafficking content info.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a way. Like, no system is perfect. No system is secure. If you have time and you have the knowledge and the means, you will find a way. So that's why we see things like this still happening. I mean, there was, I mean, related thing about, I think it was a Belgian bank or like a Luxembourg bank where someone smuggled malware into their system. And how did they do that? They just dropped USB keys all over the parking lot and someone picked one up and brought it back and plugged it in. And that was it.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get into Mr. Robot particularly, but I did enjoy the first couple of episodes and then it got a bit silly for me, but... The first episode is where the Christian Slater guy is like, "Do you want to buy my music, man? Do you want to buy my music?" And the Rafi, what's his name, Malik character, like, "Yeah, I'll listen to music." And he shoves it straight into his computer in work to listen to the music. And he's just like, "Holy crap, yeah, of course, that's ridiculously easy." Little subroutine that plays as soon as he sticks it in, loads of virus. That's it.
Yeah. Oh, it was his friend, the girl who sticks it in, yeah.
Dead easy.
Yep.
Yeah, good story. He's behind bars though. How long's he got?
Sorry, what?
How long's he
got a few years. How many? Was it 4 years? A few years.
The Americans are pretty good at handing like 200 years for this kind of stuff, aren't they?
Yeah.
But with good behaviour, he'll be out in 18 months.
Yeah, Bob Pitch is saying 4 years.
4 years. Thank you, Bob. He's read the article while we've just been bullshitting our way through it.
That's always.
Standard. Jeff, have you gotten your story yet?
Yes, mine was first, but I understand because I so rarely get in first why you would ask if I'd done my story.
So we're not waiting on anyone, are we?
Nope.
No.
All right. Bravo. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by Jeff Gamet. There we go. No, it's brought to you by TSO Hosts. They look after us. They're absolutely brilliant. We got several people that support us. One of the things that's really important to us is the news show. That's done on a daily basis, Monday to Friday, by Kyle Swagger. That only happens because we can pay Kyle to do it. He takes $250 a month, and it just covers his costs for doing it, and he does it out of love as well. Now, at the moment, we used to have Patreon, and Patreon used to give us $400 a month, so we had a bit left over to build up and accrue some stuff for equipment or stuff like that. That's gone down to $78 a month now through Patreon, so we're reliant on people subscribing to us. You can do it through Patreon if you want, but the problem with Patreon is it keeps missing payments, and it doesn't tell you or us that it's missed the payment. Far better way of doing it is going to britishtechnetwork.com/subscription, and signing up for a plan, $5, $10, or $20 a month. And if you just give us $5 a month, everyone who listens to this show signed up to $5 a month, we would be doing this for a living. Simple as that. It would be dead easy to do. The help show would come back. We'd have a Microsoft show as well. We could pay Atlee to do it. Wait, there we go. And it'd be awesome. Okay, so please, 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 if you value the news show particularly, and if you value this network, a donation is really, really cool. Some people have given us lump sums. That's fantastic. Thank you ever so much. We'll hold on to it and we'll leak it out over the next few months. But the best thing to do is just give us $5. That's all we need. We don't need a massive gesture. Just $5 every single month would make a massive difference to this network. It'd be really, really cool. And we lose our costs thanks to TSO Host. They give us two massive servers. One of them hosts all the shows that we've ever done. You can go back and listen to the original big shows. You can go back and listen to the original Mac shows. The first episode of the news show's in there as well. You'll have to do a bit of scrolling, though. That's the only thing. But that's because of them. We're lost without them. You need to get on the socials and just say thanks at TSO Host for supporting at British Tech. That's all they want from you is the brand recognition. You must do that. If you're part of the BTN Army, get yourself out there. Make sure you give that kudos to them, because we'd be lost without them helping us. And also, I'm in Max. They're based here in Birmingham. They help us. They keep all our tech running nice and smooth. And BTN listeners get 5% off. If you've got anything with an Apple logo on it and you've managed to crash it, crunch it, sit on it, bend it, damage it, get water in it, they're the people to go and see. Send it to them. They'll fix it. They'll give you a 5% discount because you're part of BTN if you mention us. And then they will courier it back to you. And these guys are touchable. You know, Callum comes on the Mac show. He's a real person. He's right here. You can see what he's like as a guy. I know these guys. I can go around and see them if you've got a problem, but you won't. And every repair they do comes with a 6-month warranty. Any refurbished machine that they sell you will come with a 6 or a 12-month warranty. And they're absolutely stand-up guys, brilliant, brilliant people. And I'm so happy that we're around the network. Please support them because they look after us. And again, get yourself out on the socials at IMNMax. Thanks for supporting at British Tech. It's time for the cool thing. Starting us off, Atlee Hunter. Atlee Hunter.
Sorry about that. Actually, I need a minute. Sorry.
Starting us off, Jeffrey Kamitz.
Okay. Link. What I have for you today is an app, and it's called Fluid. And so there's a web browser version, but I'm using the iPhone and iPad version. And this is an app that you use just to kind of chill a little bit and escape from your daily stress. And so the way it works is you just tap on the screen, and it makes these kind of colored fluid patterns. It's multi-touch, so you can have multiple streams interacting, and it's free. If you do the in-app purchase, you can do what I'm doing right now, where you have a stream that wraps around from one edge of the screen to the other, which is kind of fun. So beautiful. Anyhow, it's just a cool little app to distract yourself from daily stress.
Excellent, mate. I like that. My face recognition thing's not working for some reason. Fluid simulation. Did you ever see, I think it was called Trope. It was done by Brian Eno.
That sounds vaguely familiar.
But that was kind of like you pinged on the screen and it played a tune, and you could create like an ambient, because he was, remember, music for airports and things like
that. Oh, yes. Yeah, he That's did why two, it sounds familiar.
And one of them was Trope. And that, I loved Trope, I have to say. I used to play with that all the time. I don't know if I've still got it or not. I've still got it on my phone. Here we go. Trope. Brian, you know, create. Here it is. And it's on there. And used to get things, and then it used to repeat. And it used to draw
colors. Yeah, that's a cool app.
The music's really cool that goes with it as well. That's worth having as well. I'm going to buy yours, though, definitely, because it's the free app anyway, but it's Excellent pick, mate. Like that. Fluid Simulation on the App Store. Davil Dobroyakova. Dobroyakova. Dobrakov.
Sorry, is it the iPhone?
No, it's on the iPhone, yeah.
It's an iPhone and iPad, but there is also a website where you can play with it in a web browser.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Like that. Good one. Patrice, what have you got for us, mate?
I thought I would pick a book that I've listened to on Audible recently. It's also available in print, just if you're interested. I'll just link to the author's page, and then you can just go from there. It's from The Infinite Game from the author Simon Sinek, which some of you hopefully have heard about. Really good author, written great jobs.
He start with a Y, isn't he?
Correct, yes, yeah. That's the guy. The Infinite Game is about how, I mean, it is hard to explain like in like just a minute, but it's about the difference between finite games like football, chess, whatever, where you can win, and infinite games like business, politics, stuff like that, where like the players might change, the rules might even change, but the game goes on. Life basically is to some extent an infinite game. I mean, not on an individual level, but like on a global level. And how you deal with it, and how you change your mindset to work within the constraints of a finite or infinite game. Because what doesn't work is if you try winning in life, that's not going to work. Like, I mean, you can't win a game that just goes on forever. So if you approach something with like, I want to win in life, I want to have this and that, and I want to be a winner, that's not going to work out for you. It's a really, really good book. Really enjoyed it. Basically listened to it in one go. Wow. And it's a great author. Like he really makes things easy to understand and also actionable.
He's a very plausible guy, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I saw that he had a new book, I basically just bought it. Like I was like, okay, no matter what it is, it's going to be good. And it was.
Excellent, mate. Good pick. Thank you very much. Mr. Dabs, what do you have for us?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Mine's not terribly interesting. It's another of those crowd funding things. It was just that I've always had a problem with smart locks for many, many reasons. But one of the many reasons always bugged me was that none of the smart lock systems have ever been compatible with a lock I happen to have on my front door anyway.
Hell yes, I heard that. Definitely, mate.
And in this case, I'd also been rather dismissive of those funny little boxes you see on the front doors of where old people live, where, you know, when they've forgotten their keys, then they just poke in the number and a little box opens and they've got a spare key. And it was only when my brother-in-law had one fitted in front of his house, I suddenly realized, you know, I could pop in and out of his house when I visit the country and so on. It was actually really useful. The problem was it was so clunky and crap. And it was always like a four number press button thing. I mean, you know, I always knew that if I forgot the number, I could just get a screwdriver and open it up anyway. And I quite liked this kind of halfway measure. It is exactly one of those key boxes, secure key boxes you would stick at the front of the house. But you can remotely open it with from an app on your smartphone. And if you get the right model, it can also be opened with a fingerprint reader. And I thought, yeah, that was nice. It wasn't reaching for the skies there. That was just something I thought, yeah, I could probably get one of those. That might be useful. That was all.
How long you got to wait for it?
Don't know. Next month. In fact, this month it says March, so it means next month.
Excellent. That's not bad, actually, for Kickstarter. I waited a year for stuff that was supposed to be a month away before now.
Yeah, no, it's just, I mean, it's not terribly clever or new. It was just kind of, yeah, I could use one of those.
UTech, are they the ones that did the smart home, if this then that type thing?
It does sound like some throwing up, doesn't it?
No, I think, I don't know. I think they listen to this podcast.
Just cut that previous bit out then, yeah.
Yeah. No. It's your pronunciation is all your own, mate. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, tech.
Atlee, what have you got for us, mate? Even though you're still on mute.
So the original thing I wanted to get you guys can't buy, so that's why I said I needed you to hold on for a minute. So actually, this is a really, really simple, very inexpensive thing, but with all of us being in our homes so much more and watching so much more television than we probably have been in a while, I have actually equipped all of my TVs with a strip of this behind the television plugged into the USB port, so when the TV's on, it gives it a soft glow behind the TV to help reduce the strain on your eyes while you're watching TV for long periods of time.
Is that truth or is it bullshit?
I find it helps me a lot. I use it on my monitors too.
All right, okay. Mm-hmm.
And I find that especially in a darker situation, if the lights are low or if you don't want the full glare of the light, so you turn off the lights, the softness around the break from the harsh brightness of the screen, I find that my eyes get tired, less tired over longer periods of time. So I found it very helpful, and for the amount of money that it costs, it's actually made my eyes a lot less exhausted.
Excellent.
I just love the fact it's called Minger.
Yeah, it is called Minger. Yeah, that Minger.
Minger. I know. I thought it was pretty funny too. I thought you guys would get a kick out of that, but yeah.
Minger LED strips, 10 meters in total, 2 times 5 meters, £23. Plus VAT.
Yeah,
ooh, I like the one around the bed, the head of the bed. That's lovely.
Like, yeah, no. But I have one. I have one in the back of all of the TVs in the house and around the in the back of all my monitors. It's a much more, like I said, relaxing on the eyes.
Turn your bed into.
I could just see switching that on your bedroom and saying, "Say, do you like music?"
Turn your bedroom into a brothel with Minger.
Hey, two Mingers. Two Mingers for the price of one.
Yeah, 5 meters in length. Kids have actually got, Bryony's got a 10 meter strip of LEDs and Ellis has got a 5 meter strip of LED. And
sorry, that's me.
And they absolutely... they love them, and it's they've got disco, and it'll give you an epileptic fit and all sorts.
Brilliant. So the way I've used it is basically they have, you can set the color, and I just have them all set on a color that goes with the room that they're in, and that's it. Leave them on that color, and that's it. When the monitors come on, the lights come on.
Very good.
Yeah. I wonder if I could get a car cigarette lighter adapter for it, and have it like. Underneath my
Renault Clio,
you know.
Oh, that should work, yeah.
Aren't they illegal now?
Find out.
Where's Muller when you need him? Yeah, no, the putting your.
I mean, I'll set off in the car with glowing underneath, and the gendarme will stop me, and I say, "I'm just going out to get a baguette."
Yeah.
Just show them your paper.
Well, exactly, but damn, I forgot my paper and I didn't have anything that would attract attention of the gendarmes apart from the fact my car glows.
That's funny.
Stop me. You could write stop me with the 5 meters that they send you.
Stop me.
Dear police. Hey. Where can we get a hold of you, Atlee?
You can reach me at Atlee, at AtleeHunter.com, AtleeHunter.com, or at AtleeHunter on Twitter or Facebook. Excellent, or mate. Instagram.
See you again next week, mate. Welcome back.
Thanks.
Jeffrey Boyd?
I am over at TextExpander.com and Jay Gamet on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to sign up for webinars, just go to TextExpander.com/webinar and you can see what we have coming up. I did the reason I wasn't here for the Mac show today was because I was actually doing a webinar, and it was our beginner webinar, and it was a lot of fun. Some really cool questions, and I love it when people hit me up with, what if I wanted to do this, and we can figure out just how to make it happen.
The your pick fluid, I've been sitting playing with it while we've been going through the picks. Mate, the texture, the detail in that is unbelievable.
I know, it's amazing.
I'm going to do a screen record on it, and I'm going to use that as a backdrop for like interviews when I do green screen. I'm just going to have this mingling in the background. Just sit and make a 5-minute screen capture of this. And that's me sorted for the rest of the life.
Yeah, if you need a bigger screen for it, do it on your iPad.
Yeah, cool. Good, mate. Thank you very much. See you again next week. Your times won't have changed next week for us, so we're as we were.
Right. So I just need to double check and make sure I really show up at the right
time. We don't change until the last weekend. And then...
You know what? What's an easy solution for that?
World just clocks.
Just put a calendar item in your calendar with the correct time zone, and then it's going to work.
Which I should have done with with this week, so yeah.
Yeah, I've ran into this a million times.
Yeah, no. It's not good that you do it 2 weeks ahead of us. It always screws things up. Patrice, where would you be?
I'm every week here on the Mac Show and the Big Show, and everything I do on thepatrice.com.
Excellent, mate. And Mr. Dabs?
Well, because of coronavirus, all my freelance work has been cancelled at very short notice, and things have been cancelled. So you won't find me anywhere. So what I suggest is you all go to bobicon.com instead.
Excellent, mate. Jolly good. And you do have a heartwarming story that you have got a load of work in.
Yeah, just not writing.
Yeah, that's right. My name's Ewan Rankin. Get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. You can follow the network at British Tech, and I'm on Instagram as 12 Space Media, if you want to follow there. We're going to have a break now, and we'll be back again next week on Friday this time, not Thursday. We did it because I was supposed to be out tomorrow night, but with events, of course, the event I was supposed to be covering tomorrow night has been cancelled. So there we go. But back next Friday with the Big Show and the Mac Show and the Photo Show, and it'll all be fun. Have a great weekend and enjoy the solitude you've got next week with your spouse, which could lead to a divorce or it could lead to a load of babies. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening.